I know many of you tune in to this show to hear strange and escape stories of ghosts and Bigfoot, UFOs and alien abductions. And sometimes real life is much more terrifying. Not saying that those other aspects don't happen, but the reality of the world around us is sometimes even more frightening. And that's why I thought this story was so important to bring to the forefront this evening. Our guests have been discussing the real life true crime and unsolved case still of Johnny Gosch. Who Took Johnny is a documentary that is an examination into this infamous 30-year-old cold case. It's the disappearance of an Iowa paperboy, Johnny Gosch, one of the first missing children ever to appear on a milk carton. And our guests this evening, David Balinson and Michael Galinsky, the directors and producers and writers of this documentary. Also with us, Noreen Gosch, Johnny's mom. I need to touch base about this America's Most Wanted aspect of this story, David. Bring us in. How did they get involved in taking another look at this story, you know, 10 years after the fact?
Well, I think once Paul came forward and that sort of made news, John Walsh, who had known Noreen and known about the case, decided to do a segment on it. And they decided to interview Paul, they interviewed Noreen, and they started to follow up on some of Paul's claims. And so they actually took a trip to Colorado in the middle of the mountains where Paul had said that they had been transported and held at this house. And so in the show, we've got the footage in the film, and it's pretty sort of hair-raising material. The producers from America's Most Wanted said, well, let's see if this guy's telling the truth or not. And so they went to Colorado, and lo and behold, they found this house where Paul said that him and some of the other kids had been kept and had been locked underneath this house. And as part of the segment, they went into this house that was abandoned and went underneath and found, you know, kids' names, initials carved into wood pilings and pillars that were holding up the house. And needless to say, it's pretty shocking material. And so they sort of investigated and went as far as they could, and they just kept hitting a lot of dead ends, either people not willing to talk, not being able to find out who had owned the house. In fact, you know, Paul had talked about it was a cattle ranch that they had branded the kids at the house with the same brands that they would use on a cow, this Rocking X brand. And lo and behold, after I think they went up doing three segments on the show. After the first segment, someone called in and said, I've got one of those brands. I'm one of those kids. And they interviewed this kid, and he had the brand. So all these pieces of this sort of puzzle were starting to come together, but they couldn't take it much further than the show.
So here you've got one of the most watched television series in history, one of the most popular television series in history, shining a light on this case, and now taking Paul from the obscure, making it public, taking him out and showing that what his claims are all fall into place. How does this affect law enforcement now that it's under the public eye, and you've got John Walsh, one of the biggest advocates for child welfare and crime? It's obviously got to have some kind of impact in law enforcement and how they handle this case going forward. What happens from there?
Nothing really. Shockingly, law enforcement didn't pursue any of the leads. The FBI didn't pursue any of the leads, as far as we know. And you know, it's hard to figure out the reasons why. You know, America's Most Wanted on their own admittedly has sort of a love-hate relationship with law enforcement, in the sense that they rely on law enforcement for tips and sort of working in conjunction with them to help in these cases. But I think, you know, there's a little bit of an ego involved, because, you know, law enforcement is focused on solving these cases. And John Walsh is, you know, dedicated and is an advocate, doing his best, doing whatever it takes. But he's doing a TV show. So, you know, whether those egos got involved here, or whether it was just a matter of law enforcement not wanting to go any further, nothing else really came of it from the law enforcement perspective.
All right, we'll take another break. We'll come back. We've got more to look at, more of the case to unravel. And they talked about it briefly in the last hour, this purported network of child prostitution in nearby Omaha, Nebraska. What was that? And what is the Franklin scandal? We'll get some updates on that when we return to Coast to Coast AM. We're back on Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader. I'll be back with you again, I believe, on the 20th of August. So I hope that you'll join me when I return to Coast AM. Tonight, we're talking about the disappearance of Johnny Gosch and a strange case. Again, one of the first children to ever appear on the side of a milk carton, and just a bizarre case of abduction, heartbreak, and intrigue as we continue to unfold this. Michael, is this something that you can step up about with this purported network of child prostitution in Omaha, Nebraska, and how that might tie into the story?
Well, that's how, you know, we first heard about it, which was Nick Bryant brought this story to us. And, you know, Paul was a part of that story, and that's how it connected to Johnny. But I'm going to pass it over to David because he's done a lot more research about this, and I just think he's better equipped to handle that question.
It's essentially, and it sort of takes on its story on its own, but in Omaha, Nebraska in the late 80s, early 90s, a child prostitution network was exposed that transported kids all over the country and pandered them to, you know, sort of wealthy and powerful people who were pedophiles. And there was a legislative investigation, there were grand jury hearings and otherwise, and it wound up at the time being considered a hoax. So the sort of local grand jury found that a bunch of these kids were all lying about everything and that they were making it all up. So that story kind of disappeared, and then a bunch of people involved in that case wrote books about it. And then years later, about 20 years later, Nick Bryant, the journalist, wrote this book called The Franklin Scandal, which sort of exposed everything that happened then. And that was how we sort of got involved in the case from hearing about Nick's story. And, you know, it's a lot to get into in not that much time on the show, but I would suggest the audience to sort of look up the Franklin scandal. And I think one of the things about Noreen's, you know, story and Johnny's story and the Franklin story is there's a lot of stuff that's online. There's a lot of stuff that's been reported on it. And frankly, a lot of stuff is incorrect. It's false. It's sort of conspiracy theories. And so for us, both with Johnny's case and how it connects to Franklin, we tried very, very hard not to include some of the things that couldn't be proven, some of the things that sort of were, you know, couldn't be corroborated. Because a lot of times when you have these stories that seem sort of implausible or just too weird to be true, you know, some of the innuendo and rumors that get lumped into them help to kind of spoil the whole story and make people think it's sort of not all true. So we tried to sort of stay away from that and sort of filter out what we could prove or not prove and what we could connect or not connect.
You also mention in the documentary, the unaired documentary called Conspiracy of Silence. And what did they find that you felt tied to this story as well?
Well, what was interesting is, Yorkshire Television, these British guys came over, and when everything was happening down in Omaha, they came over to make a documentary about it, and they interviewed everybody, and it was this sort of connection between local Omaha politicians, local Omaha businessmen, sort of a bunch of teens from all sort of backgrounds, socioeconomic backgrounds, and teens who also went to Boys Town, which was the local sort of Catholic, you know, orphanage school that was in Omaha. And so there was this whole sort of connection between them that was covered in this film. Now, unfortunately, the film never aired. It was pulled before it aired. And, you know, there's rumors and reasons why that might have happened. But a rough cut, an unedited sort of rough cut, did make it online. And what's incredible is it's material from that time. So you kind of can get a sense of, you know, who the people were, and what they were saying at the time.
And to find that to find that Band Discovery Channel documentary, we have it posting right now at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com, keyword darkness. Again, that's TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com, keyword darkness. My producer and engineer here, Tim Dennis, is posting that on our personality page at Twin Cities News Talk, so people can find that as well. Yeah, another very chilling and twisted story on this case. Where does the FBI stand on this case now?
I'm not sure. I mean, they wouldn't talk to us about it. So they have a case file on Johnny, but they refuse to talk about the case.
Well, isn't it Freedom of Information Act? Can you petition for that?
Yeah, we filed a Freedom of Information request to get Johnny's case files, and when we got the FOIA request, it came destroyed. So we reopened up an envelope, manila envelope from the FBI, from the Justice Department, and there's a CD inside of it and documents saying that they had put redacted information on the CD, but the CD was crushed and destroyed when we opened it. And when we called to them to sort of have them send another copy, they told us they couldn't send another copy. We had to file another Freedom of Information request. So, you know, from our perspective, the unanswered questions sort of lead to more questions and lead to more intrigue, because what is it about a missing kids case that law enforcement would be making it so difficult for us to question? Right. As we mentioned earlier in the show, we're not investigating the Kennedy assassination. We're not investigating Iran-Contra. We're not investigating some of these bigger sort of conspiracies and bigger sort of scandals. We're investigating the story of a missing kid. So, you know, oftentimes you can learn as much by people's, you know, unwillingness to talk as you can from their willingness to talk. So for us, you know, it's hard to make conclusions when no one's talking. But the fact that no one's talking about it leads you to conclusions that something's going on here.
Right. Well, it leads to more questions. I want to jump in and point out that Paul Sparrow, who was the producer of America's Most Wanted and really, you know, dealt with a lot of these issues, had a really interesting and I think a very reasonable take on it, which is he didn't see this as some big, broad conspiracy, but instead that when you have a hierarchical system, you know, police, military, when someone above says, don't look at that, that's not your business, you learn to say, that's not my business. And so if there's one person somewhere, it's not that there's some, this is what he described, that he imagines that perhaps, you know, there's one guy who had something to hide and was able to kind of make it hidden. And you know, everybody kind of watches everybody's back.
Let's, Noreen, let's bring you back into this conversation. Paul Bonacci had a court case, and you were involved in this court case. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got involved and what this was about and what the explosive information was that ended up coming out?
Well, I was subpoenaed to testify as to what I knew about everything on the case. Paul did the same. And while I was on the witness stand, the one attorney asked if I had at any time through the years that Johnny was missing ever spoken to him or saw him. And I first refused to answer the question, and I was instructed by the judge to answer. And I said, one time. Well, there was a reporter in the back of the room, and she was writing everything down as fast as she could, and then went to the phone and gave it to her editor. And it was nationwide before we even drove home. And
so you, after Johnny did go missing, and after Paul's story came out, you did have contact with your son again?
Just once, 1997, and it was in March, and it was about 2 a.m. There was a knock at my door. And I went to the door and looked out through the little security thing in the door, the little window peephole. And there was a young man, two of them actually, standing in the hallway. One was my son. The other one I did not know. And so I said, who's there? And the voice said, it's me, Mom, it's Johnny. and I let them in. And I had been on a TV show in December, Lisa Gibbons' talk show. And at that time, she let all the mothers of the missing children that she had on the show give a personal message to their child in the event the child may be alive and see it. Well, I did that too. And in my message, I had said, contact me, Johnny. And I told him how to do that, but I was no longer living in the family home, but I would help him in any way I could. Well, according to what I was told when he was here, he saw that broadcast. I had no warning at all. They just showed up in the middle of the night. And I thought he was home to stay. And I mentioned that, and he got very upset and scared. And he said, no, I'm only here to tell you some information. You said you'd help me. And I said, well, I will. And he told me some particulars about his captivity and what they did with the kids. And I said I would start working on it. But then he asked me not to tell anyone that he had been here, and I hadn't told for over.
Noreen? I'm sorry, your phone is cutting in and out on us.
So I didn't want to be in contempt of court.
Okay.
And so I did answer the question. And incidentally, right after Johnny had been here, I scheduled an appointment with the county attorney. And I went in and I told him all the information I had been given from an informant. I did not, however, identify the informant. So then he called a meeting of all of the law enforcement people in the city, West Des Moines, Des Moines, and he invited the FBI. The FBI were the only ones that declined to attend. And that's when we discussed all this information.
You give this information. Did Johnny indicate what happened to the two other boys that went missing that were very similar to his story, Eugene Martin, and I apologize, the other name is slipping my mind at this point.
He did not speak to the other two boys, where they were taken or if he even knew them at any point. What he did tell me was the nature of the business, and it was definitely an organized pedophile ring and basically a new form of organized crime. Not Al Capone style, but another very organized level of organized crime that was using children as their, their chattel,
sex toys,
their,
right, yeah.
You know, to gain financial gain, money. It's all about the money.
You hear this coming from the mouth of your own child. It's no longer conjecture. It's no longer speculation or theory. It is now confirmed from the mouth of your own son that this has taken place.
He had no reason to lie to me when he made the effort to come here.
Right.
And when they left, I walked outside, and there was no car parked anywhere that was visible to me, but they disappeared into the night walking, and then in the distance, I heard an engine start. So they didn't even park their car close to where I live. It was a distance away. When you're in a situation like that, the kids, and there are other ones that are alive, the kids learn very quickly how to hide in plain sight, because none of them look like they did when they were abducted. They were just little kids at that time. They're grown men now, so he could walk around the city of Des Moines and nobody would know who he was at this point. And they all go by different names than their given name for their protection. So not all of them die. Many are just turned out and abandoned with basically no education or job skills.
All right, we have to take a break. Why don't they run away? Why are they attending schools and living life? Why don't they make themselves known and take themselves back into life, bring themselves back and give the answers to their family? We'll talk about that when we return. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Guys, I've got to ask you, we just heard Noreen's story about Johnny making a resurface, reappearing and giving her this information. She took a lot of flack from people and the media about this. Why would people question that aspect of this story? Why is that such a far-fetched scenario, considering how the story has gone and how glaringly law enforcement and the FBI have missed this opportunity to open up the story?
Well, I think it's interesting whenever we show the movie, people say these two things. Number one, why wouldn't she call the police? And number two, why didn't she just grab him and hold him down? But both those things are patently difficult or ridiculous. Number one, all that's because you can ask Maureen, but she'll tell you, she said, he told me not to call. And so I had to do what he needed. But it's always very difficult for people to get at that point in the movie how this could be. But for me, it made total sense.
Noreen, some of these children are living normal lives in the sense that they're going to schools, they're out and about, they're hanging out with friends, yet they're part of this horrible circle, this weird, twisted sex ring. Why don't they run away when they get the chance?
Fear. A lot
fear
of times.
Fear of what? Yeah, what are they doing?
A lot of times the people that use and abuse these kids for money or whatever reason tell the kids, if you go to the police or you try to run away, we will kill your family, your mother, your brother, your sister, your father, we will kill your family. And this has been told to a lot of the victims. So the kids are scared to death to make a move. And if you have been kidnapped and taken away from everything you know, your family, your home, your room, and you're not attending a school, and you're told something like this every day from the time you're 12 years old, it is, in effect, like brainwashing them. And they will, even if they see a policeman across the street, they will not break and run. It is a whole mind game that they pull on these kids.
Well, don't they involve the children, too, in the sense of making them part of crimes so then they're told, listen, if you go forward, if you try to bring us down, you're involved in this. You pulled the trigger. You helped us get these kids and intimidate and scare these kids so that they're actually part of this crime.
Yes, usually they force the kids to commit a felony soon after they take them. And then they always hold that over their heads. You can't go to the police. You committed a felony. They'll throw you in jail. And that's another threat that they use. And in my estimation, the men that do these things, commit these crimes against children, are nothing but weak cowards to do that to a child. I have no tolerance for child molesters, none.
We have to take our final break. Folks, we have to step up. You have to make this move. And it's hard to talk to our children sometimes about these topics because we don't want to put the fear in them. But it's better to put a little fear in them up front and give them information so that they are protected. Let them know that when they are challenged or threatened by an adult or an authority figure telling that they're going to be in trouble, they're going to be arrested, they're going to be hurt, or the family's going to be hurt if they come forward, they have to still come forward. Tell them that you promise that they will not be in any danger, they will not be hurt, you will be safe. Let them know up front that if any of these challenges come in, whether it's just simple molestation or abduction, our children have to know that we are strong enough, we will help, and that they can come to us no matter what the task is. And it's something that needs to be broached. We have to cover these things with our children. We have to let them know. I've had that very rough discussion with my own children and tough moments when you tell your children, you know, If you're out and, God forbid, somebody grabs your sister, grabs your friend, you need to run. You need to scream. You need to yell fire. You need to run and just go, because the chances are greater that you'll both be taken. And if you do something and get away, if they're threatening you, as it happened to me when I was a child, when he said, get in the car, I have a gun, I had two choices. Believe that he had a gun and get in that car and probably never be seen again, or run like hell and scream, which is exactly what I did. And here I am 38 years later and thankful for that that action that I took. Most cases, they're just trying to scare you and intimidate you in. You've got to run. Let your children know these rules. Let them know. We're going to take another quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up with our guests here on Coast to Coast AM. Remember, when it comes to a missing person, child or adult, every second counts. Every second counts. The Lassie Project is a free service that gives parents and guardians the ability to notify an entire local community about their missing child or at-risk adults, and they can do it in mere seconds. With a single push of a button that sends a text alert to parents and guardians, they can mobilize a trusted group of family, friends, neighbors immediately in aiding of a search for a missing child or a special needs adult. This is a group or community they call a network, and this is the most important asset you can have in those precious moments from the minute you realize your child is missing until they can be brought home. They've had some remarkable success stories. Please check out the Lassie Project, LassieProject.com, LassieProject.com, and enter your information, your children's information, and become a part of the network. And if you're just a neighbor, but you've got children in the neighborhood, alert and put yourself in there as well so that you are part of the alert package. And when that happens, God forbid it happens, you will be one of the first to be able to respond, and you may be able to save a life. So please look into the LassieProject.com. Noreen, gosh, have you heard or seen from your son ever again? Noreen?
Yes. Go ahead.
Have you seen or heard from Johnny ever again?
No. No, that was the only time.
Messages, emails, a piece of mail without a return address, nothing ever come through again?
No.
Do you ever worry that coming forward like this endangered him because of what he had requested never to talk about this?
I did consider that, but it may not have been also. You make tough choices in a case like this, and
yeah, you do
what you have to do at the time. And we explored every possibility with the information that he gave us, both with private investigators and through the county attorney, who was helpful to me. And when everyone turned against me and said they didn't believe me, he went on a TV show and said, I have no reason at all to not believe what Noreen told me. She came to me right away after receiving the information. And I believe she did get it from her son. So he did go to bat for me, and I did appreciate that a great deal.
Noreen, I can tell you as a parent myself, as a just a person that believes in humanity of others, thank you for the work that you've done and keeping this story alive and helping to get different organizations behind you and helping to bring out these answers. And I don't know that many people know this, but you also help with other families that have dealt with this kind of loss, stepping up and being a part of this. And I can't, again, as a parent myself, to think that maybe your child is dead after being abducted is one horrific nightmare. I can't even wrap my head around what it must be like to realize that you have the relief of knowing that your son is alive, but then also know what he has gone through in the 30 years since his abduction and how that must have just been absolutely devastating to the soul. How did this affect your marriage and life with your husband after the loss of your son?
Well, after a few years, his dad just quit wanting to work on the case, to pursue and keep pursuing the truth, and was not supportive at all, and created a lot of problems, almost to the point of sabotage at a couple different junctures. So I could not live with that, nor tolerate it. and we divorced and went our separate ways, and I pursued the truth. And had it not been for hiring private investigators, good ones, I wouldn't know today all the information that I have. I would be still left with huge question marks, and many of those have been answered now. And if that's all there will be, and there won't be a resolution, it's unlikely that anyone in this jurisdiction of law enforcement will step forward to do anything. Why would they now when they didn't all the previous years? So that might be all there is. And there comes a point of acceptance of what you're dealing with, too. You can't change everything. You can make quite a case for it, and you can go forward as fast as you can. But sometimes you hit a brick wall, and you just pray for a break in the case or something else to happen or someone else to come forward. And that, you know, that could happen still.
Did he give any leads to you regarding any other cases, any other children, to give insights to parents who might be wondering where their daughter or son are?
He did some, and then I also received in the mail a CD that had 500 pictures of kids on it around that same time frame of when I saw Johnny. And I made that copy available to the FBI in Washington, and they worked with the National Center on that to help identify some of the missing kids that were on that video, that CD. And all the kids were bound and gagged in the pictures, and there were three pictures that had the perpetrator in the photo with them. And so I was not given details of what the outcome of those cases were, but I was only told that it helped to identify a number of children that were in cold case files.
Now, you've also got, there were some of the pictures that you believe might have been Johnny. Is that right? And have those ever been identified as anybody else's child?
No. I did receive pictures that were delivered to my home that were Johnny, and they were authenticated, and they are Johnny. And the police came up with some story and made a big public thing saying that they weren't Johnny based on some guy in Florida that had information on an index recipe card. And then later, the newspaper printed a retraction saying that the man in Florida, who was, a sheriff's office or something, that he was never able to produce any proof of anything that he had said. So the newspaper did print a retraction. And, when the police called me and said that they were going to do a press conference on it and say that it wasn't Johnny, I said, you might want to hold off on that, or you're going to end up looking very foolish in the public eye. And that's what happened. They went on the word of this man and a recipe card with no proof of anything, just a phone call from the guy. And it turned out that aspect of the story was not accurate, and the police did look very foolish. So,
Noreen, if you could leave our listeners with one thought, if they've gone through this or they're going through this, what would that be?
To still keep hope. Hope for resolution in your cases. Hope for a break in the case. Hope that your child may still be alive unless you have evidence that they're not. There's some surprising things that have happened through the history of kidnappings. Girls that have been held for 18 years and found as adults.
Right.
Miracles do happen. And, you know, I am very grateful to Michael and David for believing in this story, going forward with it, and producing this movie to bring Johnny's story to the public.
And again, you can find it on Amazon.com, Who Took Johnny? It's on iTunes, and soon will be hitting Netflix. David, Michael, just literally a few minutes left. Have you guys received any new leads or tips now that this documentary is out there on Johnny or other missing children?
I'm not sure if Dave is still there. We've gotten some emails. We've gotten some emails, but nothing that we've been able to really follow up on.
But I think that's one of the amazing things about the case is that, you know, there have been a lot of missing kids cases. I think there's currently 100,000 active unresolved missing kids, over 100,000 in the Justice Department files. But Johnny's case in particular continues to breed clues, interest. I mean, of all the things that happened over the last 30 years with Noreen, you know, you either have to assume that people are involved in the case are still sending clues, or is it people who are trying to sabotage Noreen or otherwise? Like, what is it about his case that's causing people to still be interested in it? And I think a lot of that is a testament to Noreen's will to keep the case alive. You know, as she says, if, you know, she's not looking for her son, no one else is. And, you know, the advocate work that she's done. But, you know, we're hopeful that, you know, time is on our side in the sense that that the case might get resolved one day. And frankly, the clues to doing that, the answers to doing that are out there. So there's someone out there now alive who could probably shed light on this in a way that hasn't been done before. And I think we're all waiting for that person or persons to come forward and help do that.
Well, thank you both for taking the time to create this documentary, raise awareness, and let the story continue to be heard, because it is an important story for anyone that is has children in their lives to realize that this is nothing that is just movie fodder. This is real life, and this is going on at all times. Noreen, we have 1 minute left. I'm just curious, after all that went down, have you forgiven Paul Bonacci for what his role was involved in this?
Well, definitely. Years and years ago, I could not hold that against him. He was just a young person being forced to do what he did. And he had been sexually abused since he was 5 years old. And these men took advantage of him as a young teen and took him along to lure kids to the car. And much of the time he had a gun pointed at him to make him do what he did. And Paul has definitely stepped up and really tried to help us through the years.
Well, thank you for the courage to come on this evening and spend 4 hours with us and sharing your story and so much insight. Again, folks, we've barely scratched the surface of this story. I highly recommend watching the documentary for yourself, getting Noreen's book. You can find more information on Coast to Coast AM. You'll also be able to find it on my website at darknessradio.com. Please educate yourself and educate your children, your grandchildren, your nieces and nephews, and let them know how to be safe. I want to thank everybody for tuning in, and a special thanks to Donna Walker, Jeff DeRay, my engineer and co-host here in Minnesota, Tim Dennis, my producers Chris Boros and booking producer Amy Rousey, and of course Lisa Lyon and the one and only George Norrie. Thank you for allowing us to be on the show this evening, and I'll be back with you again on August 20th. I hope you'll join me. Until then, you can find more information about me and my radio show, Darkness Radio, at darknessradio.com. Be kind to one another, and we'll talk to you again real soon here on Coast to Coast AM.